The Self-Helpless Podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp Customized Online Therapy. Listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/selfhelpless. Listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/selfhelpless. That's BETTERHELP.com/selfhelpless. We know that you need a good night's sleep, and we also know how to get it. Go to helixsleep.com/helpless, take their 2-minute sleep quiz, and they'll match you to a customized mattress that will give you the best sleep of your life. Helix is offering up to $200 off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners at helixsleep.com/helpless. Coterie diapers are made with clothing-grade material, giving your baby a cashmere-like feel so they're more comfortable for longer day and night. They are dermatologist-tested and use only the cleanest ingredients, plus Coterie wipes are National Eczema Association approved. Coterie has been awarded Best Diaper and Wipes by both The Bump and Parents.com, so you can forget about nighttime leaks and wet sheets and try the Rolls Royce of diapers, Coterie. Right now, Coterie is partnering with Self-Helpless to offer you 20% off your first order plus free shipping at coterie.com/helpless. That's Coterie, spelled coterie.com/helpless for 20% off and free shipping.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Self-Helpless Podcast. I'm Delaney Fisher.
And I'm Kelsey Cook.
And we have such an incredible guest today. Nadira Habibullah is a licensed marriage and family therapist specializing in issues of trauma and attachment. And Healing Her Trauma is a mental health service founded by Nadira, and it offers therapy and coaching services to women, children, and families. And we talk all about PTSD today, post-traumatic stress disorder. We talk about the symptoms and signs of it, how it develops, how to treat it, what that looks like in, you know, experiencing trauma as a child versus an adult. I mean, all kinds of stuff. So, and just a little disclaimer, there are some tough situations that come up on this episode. So if you feel like you need to skip this because it might be a bit triggering, you might need to skip it or listen to it at a different time. But before we get into the episode, Kelsey, where are you performing? Where can people catch you?
Yes, you guys can see me on the Hustler Tour this weekend in Tampa at Side Splitters. And then any Boston Helpsters, I am going to be at Laugh Boston May 27th through the 28th. And I'm shooting my special so soon. I'm going to be in Denver at Comedy Works June 16th through the 18th. And the 18th is the day that I'm shooting the special. So there are 2 shows on that Saturday. Delaney will be there.
Yeah, we just booked our tickets, baby. Hey! What's up?
We've said it before, but look, Delaney's not, you know, doing comedy anymore.
I don't leave the house.
She doesn't leave the house. And I feel so honored that she would leave her home, not just leave her home, but get on a plane to come. And so if you guys have met Taylor on tour, maybe met me as well on tour, but you haven't gotten to meet Delaney, this is a chance. You can meet me and Delaney at the same time. We love meeting helpsters. We would love to like hug you, take a picture.
Yeah.
Taylor, unfortunately, will be on the road that weekend and won't be able to be there, but she will be there in spirit. And yeah, just would love to see you guys. So it's kelseycook.com for those tickets. And as always, Taylor's tickets are ttomcomedy.com for her tour tickets. Delaney, what you got going on?
Yeah, just a bit of another announcement. I've said it before, but I think people are slowly finding out. Efficionado, the podcast, the minimalist business podcast, is now a private podcast. It's still free, but it's only accessible at DelaneyFisher.com. You can sign up to receive it straight to your inbox. You can also link it to your favorite podcast player, so you can still listen to it on, you know, whatever app you prefer. You just have to get it a little bit of a different way, so it's not visible or accessible on any public platforms anymore. So for more information, DelaneyFisher.com, if you would like to receive it. And if you're like, why the fuck did you do that? We cover that inside the podcast. So there you go. That's it.
Perfect. All right, guys, please enjoy this episode all about PTSD.
Nadira, thank you so much for being with us today. It is about time we covered this topic.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Yes. And before we get into all the millions of questions we have for you, do you have a favorite or least favorite quote that you'd like to share?
I do. So I was thinking one in, and my quote changes, you know, from day to day, week to week, but right now, and I would love to cite whoever I got this from, but I don't know. But my favorite quote right now is that the biggest obstacle is not the mountain, but it is the story that we tell ourselves about the mountain.
Oh, that is a freaking quote. That is so good.
Wow. I love that one.
That is great. We talk so much about mindset and all of that on this show, and it's so true. What is that one quote, whether you think you can or you can't, you're right.
You're right.
Reminds me of that. Oh man, literally. That's a great one. Well, you're already crushing this interview. So
Okay. That feels good.
Keep the momentum going. So would you mind just giving us an overview of what is PTSD? What does that look like?
Yeah, so PTSD, for anyone that doesn't know, post-traumatic stress disorder, basically it is the sign of an over-adapted brain. So like if we go through something that is traumatic, and I'm defining trauma as something where we feel like we are in danger, or, you know, where there's fear there, the trauma of it is going to be that like, oh my gosh, I don't know if I'm going to live. I don't know if I'm going to die. I don't know if I'm going to be okay. I don't know if I'm safe. All of that. In that moment, it makes sense for the brain to adapt and be very much aware. So for example, hypervigilance, always be on the lookout and seeing what's going on. That makes sense if we are really in danger. You know, so a lot of people who are diagnosed with PTSD, veterans. Now, if you're off at war, then you want to have those symptoms. That's actually going to be adaptive for you. You want to be on the lookout. You want to be very alert. You don't want to be calm at all. But now, after that is over, you're taken out of the traumatic incident scene or whatever it is. Now you're in a different environment, but the brain doesn't know that. The brain is still responding as though you're still in the middle of that war. You're still in that car accident. You're still being held at gunpoint or whatever it is. And so that's why I'm saying over adapted, because that's an adaptive behavior in the instance of an emergency, but it's no longer adaptive if we're safe now and the traumatic situation is gone. So that's pretty much what it is. You've gone through something that was traumatic. It was very scary for you. And now the time is over and you're safe now. There's no longer an issue, but the body is still responding as though it is.
Wow.
Yeah. It's such a deep thing with so many different layers to it. When you are seeing people as a therapist, what is your first kind of go-to tool that you use with them trying to help them navigate PTSD?
Yeah. So my first tool, with everybody, and this is regardless of what you're coming to me for, is to make what is called a genogram. And so a genogram is like a family tree picture. And a lot of therapists do it, specifically the type, like I'm a marriage and family therapist. So anybody who goes to school for marriage and family therapy, like that's drilled into you. You make this genogram. It's a family tree sort of picture that you draw. And of course I'm drawing, you know, your mom, your dad, your siblings on there, but I'm also drawing information about the relationship. So how close are you to mom? How close are you to dad? Or is there a cutoff anywhere? Like we don't talk to grandpa, any of that sort of thing. I'm drawing that in. And so that just gives me a great background to understand, okay, who's in your family? What have you been through? But more importantly, how have you storied what you've been through? And so that really helps, because even if we're talking about PTSD, I have an issue and I don't know, I was in a car accident and now I can't get in a car and drive. It's still helpful for me to know the other things that you have been through before, because if you already have a pretty high trauma history, they can make you more likely to have PTSD now. Or what does your support system look like? You know, so if I know I already did your genogram and I know you don't talk to your mom, you haven't met your dad, that's going to make it harder dealing with this issue. You know, because with everything, if it's PTSD, if it's anxiety, whatever it is, we all need community, you know. And so I'm always starting there. What does your early experiences look like? What does your community look like? And how have you storied the things that you've been through?
Oh, wow. That's so good. That makes so much sense. So how, I know this is probably not a very simple answer, but how do you start to tell the body and the brain that you're no longer in that dangerous situation? What kind of things do people have to implement to improve that, their PTSD?
Yeah. So that can be challenging. It depends on your particular approach. So like for me, I'm trained in EMDR, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. And so a lot of people may not know what that is, but it's a basically a therapeutic technique that helps your brain to kind of reprocess information that was processed incorrectly. And now it's like stored. I'm trying to explain it in a way so it's not complicated, but now it's stored in your brain in a way that it keeps coming up for you. Because the main thing that we look at with PTSD and what lets us know somebody is dealing with PTSD is intrusion, meaning the event is over, it's past. Now you're going on, you're trying to live your life, but you can't because symptoms, things from before keep intruding into your current day life. So that can look like nightmares. I can't sleep because I keep dreaming about what happened. Or I'm just trying to have breakfast and I keep having visions of the thing that happened. You know, I'm talking to people, I keep having visions. Or so many different things remind you of it. It's constantly just intruding into your life. It's interrupting your regular day. And so through EMDR, it helps the brain. That's what I do. There are other ways. It helps the brain to reprocess that story so that the intrusion won't come up anymore.
Okay. Oh, wow. So it's like getting stored in a different part of your brain after you're reprocessing the memory in a way.
Yeah. So anytime we go through something traumatic, in that moment, our brain is going to start working differently. So when we're like relaxed and calm, you're going to be mostly in this frontal lobe. And that's where you can do like all of your executive thinking and functioning, like when you're at work, like right now, we're probably all in the frontal lobe. But if something happens, like, oh, I don't feel safe, something's going on, that frontal lobe that goes offline. And so then if we feel like I'm scared, there's this little part in the middle of the brain. And of course, I'm simplifying this, but there's a little part in the middle of the brain. It's called the amygdala. And that's kind of like the fear center or the trauma center. And so that's the part that comes on that lets me know, oh, I'm not safe. I need to do something to get to safety. And so most people have heard of like fight, flight, or freeze, right?
Yeah.
Right. So that's what we'll go into that. I need to fight my way off. I need to be aggressive, or I need to run and get out of here. Or kind of like a, you know, possum. I'm so overwhelmed that just freeze. I don't know what to do. And so that we're going to do some version of that in the moment until we get to safety. Now, once we get to safety, this event is over. Now, this is what we want to happen. And this get help. This is why we need community. We want to be able to say, man, that thing that just happened, whew, that was wild. That was really, really scary, but I'm okay now. It's over. It's in the past. It's not here anymore. And I'm okay. And so if we had, and usually when you have other people that are there to talk to you and help you and say, oh no, that wasn't your fault or whatever it is, it can help you get to that point. If we do that, we can go through the craziest thing. But as long as you can get to the point of it's over, I'm okay. It's in the past. I'm here. It's there. You're going to be fine. You're not going to have PTSD. But when we get to PTSD, that means that it wasn't processed in that way. So we never got to the point of it's over, it's fine. It got stuck somewhere. And usually when it gets stuck, it's because we develop some type of negative belief about ourselves. Okay. So if I am going through, like, let's say again, a car crash or something. I was in a car accident. And so now I'm really, really scared and I can't drive again. Instead of processing that in a way where I got to be able to say like, man, that was crazy, but it's over, I'm safe. Maybe I made sense of that in a way that it said, oh my gosh, I am so alone and I'm not safe and I'm going to die. And not in the eventual sense of everybody's going to die, but like, I am going to die. Now, if that's the way I process it, I can't get to it's over, I'm okay. I'm stuck in, I'm alone, I'm unsafe, I'm going to die. And so if that's the case, then anytime I get back in the car, what's coming up? I'm alone, I'm going to die.
Wow. Oh my God.
You know, so that's what PTSD is. It's coming back. It's the intrusion of what was present before, but it's feeling present now.
Oh my God. I've never heard somebody explain it this way. This is, wow. Yes. This is so good. Kels,
anything? Yeah. When you see clients who have PTSD from something that happened in their childhood versus something that happened to them as an adult, do you approach that two different ways or do you approach it the same way? Because I would imagine that a traumatic experience in your childhood, it's like you're not, your brain even physically isn't even in a place to know what to do with that experience versus as an adult. Yeah, so that's a rambly question, but
No, you're good. So yeah, it's totally different because if you have trauma that's coming up now in adulthood, and let's say your childhood was pretty solid, you know, you didn't have any major traumas, you weren't abused, you didn't go through any of those types of things that we would never want for our kids or for anybody else, then it's going to be a lot easier to process this current trauma. Because if we are able to have like a pretty good solid childhood, that will create kind of like a buffer for us. Yeah. And so then when we get older, you know, everybody goes through different things. You get hurt, you lose your job, you different things, but that buffer will make it easier for you to deal with that. Now, if you have a higher trauma history, oh, I was from foster home to foster home. My parents used to beat me. My parents were under all types of different things. That buffer is lots of times not there. Right. And so it's going to be much harder to, or not much harder, I'll say, we have to go a lot slower when we're dealing with trauma, when you have this higher, this history from childhood, again, which is why I start with that family tree, because I don't want, it's not just about what's happening today. The way you are interpreting and dealing with what's happening today is usually going to be affected by what happened before. So I always have to be able to go back and see. And if my clients do have a really high trauma history, then we have to go really, really slow. We have to. So, for example, with EMDR, do you guys know anything about EMDR?
We've touched on it on the podcast a little bit, but we haven't done, a full episode on it before.
Okay. Well, that will be a good thing to do an episode on. But basically with EMDR, it's like you use some type of bilateral stimulation to get the brain into processing mode. Because anytime we are processing something, we're making sense of it. Like, what does all that mean? If you were to sit under some type of like brain scan, it would show that your brain is doing like this, like left hemisphere, right hemisphere, back and forth. That's what it does when we're processing. So in EMDR, we want to kick it over into processing. And so the way that we do that, it's a lot of different ways, but the traditional way, and this is where the name comes from, eye movement desensitization, is through back and forth eye movements. And so it sounds kind of weird, sounds kind of crazy, but it's so a real thing.
Yeah.
Back and forth eye movement. So the person, whatever the trauma is, you're kind of holding it in your head. You're pulling up an image of it. So if it's a car crash, you're pulling up an image of the worst part. Oh gosh, I see that car coming at me. Hold that in your head. And then the therapist, you're in the same room. Therapist does like this. And you're following those fingers with your eyes. Deep, 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 deep. And as you're doing that, the brain is going spark, 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 spark. And so that's how we get the processing. Wow. Now, if I'm working with someone who doesn't have a childhood history, we can probably get to the actual trauma in the first day. We start with something called resourcing, which is like, let's do this to calm you down, relax you, cool. And then we can go straight to that trauma. Now, if you have a lot of trauma, what they call complex PTSD, meaning I've been through a lot of different things and it's really challenging, I'm probably not going to get to the processing in that first day. I might have to do a couple of weeks. We might have to do months worth of just resourcing with it, just doing things to help calm your body, just to help you feel safe enough, just to help you feel okay. So we got to go much slower if you've been through a lot of things versus this is just one particular incident.
Okay.
Wow.
So, and you just touched on complex PTSD. That's also known as CPTSD, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Can you just go a little deeper on that? Because we've done a few episodes on narcissistic personality disorder and coming off of like basically healing from an abusive relationship with somebody with NPD. And that is something that seems to be very reoccurring as like the whole CPTSD component of that, that it's more complex. Can you explain why that is?
Yeah. So PTSD is basically like, okay, there was this one event that happened to me and it was bad. Right. Complex PTSD is more like there were tons of events that happened to me that were bad. So it might be easier for a person with complex PTSD. It might be easier to count the good moments in my life than the bad moment because it has just been a lot. It's been a really, really challenging things. And so that makes it harder because everything that, and this is why I just love the human brain and the body. Everything that our body does is an attempt to preserve us. Even the things that don't feel good, even the things that seem like that's crazy, why would you do that? It's always an attempt to preserve us. So even when you look at personality disorders and, you know, narcissistic, that's a big one. At some point, I don't know what whoever has narcissistic personality disorder, but that was some type of defense that they developed earlier in life, you know, being very much self-centered, not really focusing or noticing other people's feelings. They developed that in defense of something, against something earlier in life. Maybe they felt like, okay, no one else really cares about me, so it's just me. If I'm going to make it, if I'm going to survive, it's just me. So I got to be like this, you know, so it always, even if it ends up being something that is hurtful or maladaptive, this is the body's attempt to try to protect itself from something. Right. And so that's why it's just the more that you have been through, the less nurture that you had, the less opportunities that you've had to feel like, you know, safe and wanted in the world, the more likely it is that you're going to develop maladaptive coping skills so that you can get through life.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. That makes sense.
And you mentioned that I would love to know kind of any patterns you've seen who have been susceptible to PTSD. We've all heard, like, obviously somebody goes to war, they're going to have PTSD usually, but do you notice anything in your own practice where there's some patterns that maybe people would be surprised about of people coming in who are suffering with PTSD?
Yeah. So PTSD, people are more likely to develop that if they felt like helpless, like there wasn't something I could have done. So, for example, I remember I was watching something and they've done all these studies on, 9/11 and the survivors of that and, you know, who did and didn't have PTSD. And so whoever the lecturer was that I was watching, he was saying, you know, there were a lot of people who, at least the ones who were low enough to be able to, like, get out of the building, and like they tried to run home. They tried to get home or just get away. And the people who tried to do something, even if it, who knows what it was, if it was trying to run home, if it was trying to help, if it was trying to do anything like that, they were less likely to develop PTSD because they felt like I did something, like I showed up, like I had some agency, I was able to do something. Or so, for example, like in cases of rape, you know, a lot of people get PTSD from that. But if someone, they weren't even successful, but even if they tried to fight back or they tried to do something, that person could be less likely to develop PTSD because they could say, oh, well, even though it didn't really work, you know, I tried to hit him, I tried to push him, I tried to do something like that. But that helps to inform the story they tell themselves about what it is that happened.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Really interesting.
Okay, helpsters, I know we've asked you before, but the importance of good sleep is something that we come back to over and over on the podcast. So if you are listening right now and you're having trouble sleeping on your same old mattress, it's definitely time for a change. I know that Delaney and I, we used to have mattresses that were not the best for us. Delaney talked about having a lot of back issues and that her Helix mattress completely changed that. We know that feeling that you might as well stick with an old mattress because finding a new mattress is stressful when you don't know where to start and all that. There was no ideal way to start until now. Helix Sleep has a quiz that takes just 2 minutes to complete and matches your body type and sleep preferences to the perfect mattress for you. Because why would you buy a mattress for someone else, you know? With Helix, you're getting a mattress that you know will be perfect for the way you sleep. Everybody's unique, and Helix knows that, so they have several different mattress models to choose from. They've got soft, medium, and firm mattresses, mattresses great for cooling you down if you sleep hot, and even a Helix Plus mattress for plus-size folks. So Delaney and I both took the Helix quiz. I was matched with the Midnight Lux mattress. I wanted something that felt medium, you know, just kind of in the middle. I sleep on my side for most of the night, and I just have become completely obsessed with this mattress. It truly is the best sleep I've ever gotten. I get so excited to come home from being on the road and get to sleep in my own bed. It's so nice. We absolutely love our mattresses, and also the pillows are incredible. I have a cooling mattress topper as well, and it just makes a huge difference in my sleep. So if you're looking for a mattress, you take the quiz, you order the mattress that you're matched to, and the mattress comes right to your door shipped for free. You don't ever need to go to an actual mattress store again. Helix is awesome, but you don't need to take our word for it. Helix was awarded the number one best overall mattress pick of 2020 by GQ and Wired Magazine. So just go to helixsleep.com/helpless, take their 2-minute sleep quiz, and they'll match you to a customized mattress that will seriously give you the best sleep of your life. They have a 10-year warranty, and you get to try it out for 100 nights risk-free. They'll even pick it up for you if you don't love it, but you will. Helix is offering up to $200 off all mattress orders and two free pillows for our listeners at helixsleep.com/helpless. That's up to $200 off all mattress orders and two free pillows at helixsleep.com/helpless. With all of the questionable materials in baby products these days, parenting can be scary. You want to keep your baby safe and protected without sacrificing their comfort. With Coterie, your baby can have both the cleanest and highest performing diapers with a comfortable feel. So I don't have a baby, but I love my niece so much. She just turned 8 months old. And so I had the Coterie products sent to my brother and my sister-in-law to use on my sweet little niece, and they are loving the diapers. They said it's some of the best they've ever used. And it's so nice to know that the ingredients in them are safe and amazing. Coterie is the highest performing diaper on the market for infants and toddlers with up to 2 times more liquid capacity and up to 4 times faster moisture wicking versus other brands. Your baby stays drier longer, and Coterie parents report fewer nighttime diaper changes, which can lead to better sleep quality, not just for your baby, but for you too. Coterie diapers are made with clothing grade material, giving your baby a cashmere-like feel, so they're more comfortable for longer day and night. They're dermatologist tested and use only the cleanest ingredients, plus Coterie wipes are National Eczema Association approved. Coterie has been awarded best diaper and wipes by both The Bump and Parents.com. Forget about nighttime leaks and wet sheets and try the Rolls-Royce of diapers, Coterie. Right now, Coterie is partnering with our podcast to offer you 20% off your first order plus free shipping at coterie.com/helpless. That's Coterie spelled Coterie.com/helpless for 20% off and free shipping. Coterie.com/helpless. The Self-Helpless podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy. Life can be overwhelming, and many people are burned out without even knowing it. Symptoms can include lack of motivation, feeling helpless or trapped, detachment, fatigue, and more. If any of those resonate with you, just know that you are so not alone. Delaney and I talk so often, both on the show and off the show, just with one another, about feeling burnt out and not taking enough time for ourselves. And having our therapists with BetterHelp makes such a huge difference. It's nice that we have those appointments that are set aside, that we can sit down, talk about what's going on in our lives, and strategize on how to feel less burnt out. So we associate burnout with work, but that's not the only cause. Any of our roles in life can lead us to feeling burnt out. And BetterHelp Online Therapy wants to remind you to prioritize yourself. Talking with someone can help you figure out what's causing stress in your life. So Delaney and I have these great tools now from our therapists with BetterHelp that make it so we can, you know, not just use them in our sessions with them, but then out in the real world afterward. And it's just helped a ton. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and Self-Helpless listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/selfhelpless. That's BETTERHELP.com/selfhelpless. We talk on this show also a lot about attachment styles in relationships. And I'm curious, as a marriage and family therapist, how do you see somebody's potential PTSD, maybe from their childhood, show up as an attachment style? Do you feel like somebody with PTSD is more likely to have an avoidant attachment style or more of an anxious attachment style? Or does it just kind of depend on the person?
I would say it depends on the person, but definitely when you see people with complex PTSD, so, you know, I've had a lot of different things happen to me, it's pretty unlikely that they are going to have like a secure attachment just because they weren't put in the environment where a secure attachment could happen. Sure. And so usually it's going to be that more anxious side or that more dismissive, avoidant side. So, but with just PTSD on its own, I don't really see much of a connection, but with complex PTSD, for sure, you're usually going to, any person who has that is likely going to be either avoidant or dismissive. I feel like just anecdotally in my practice, I see a lot more, I said avoidant or dismissive, I meant anxious or dismissive. Right. I see a lot more people with anxious attachment.
Okay.
That I do with avoiding.
People kind of overextending themselves rather than removing themselves in terms
of what you're doing. Because and I think that makes sense, because usually an anxious attachment is going to come more from having caregivers or being in an environment where like you were cared for, you had the basic things, but it wasn't consistent. Like, I don't know for sure when my caregiver comes in, it's usually going to be a mom. When my mom comes in, I don't know what mom I'm going to get. Maybe I'm going to get the fun loving mom who gives me hugs and does all that stuff. Maybe I'm going to get the depressed mom who ignores me all the time. Maybe I'm going to get the really irritable mom who will smack me off of the tiniest little thing. But she's not always, I don't know. And so now I have this anxiety because I want you to love me. I'm reaching out. Please see me. Please pay attention to me. But then I'm also scared that you're not going to do it. Because sometimes you do it, but sometimes you don't. And so that's where that anxiety comes from. I want you to be with me, but I'm scared. I'm scared you're going to leave me. You're not going to be there. But please, I want you to do it. And maybe if I do something, if I act a certain way, if I try to be who you want me to be, if I try to be really cute, and if I try to be really smart, and if I try to be whatever I think you're going to be, then you will be consistent, because that's what they're wanting. Be consistent with me. And so that's where that, you know, that clinginess comes from. Whereas this dismissive, that's going to be more of like, maybe again, your basic needs were met, but that emotional attachment, it just wasn't there. And so you got to the point of, you know what, I might as well give up. Nobody's going to be there for me. Nobody's going to care. You know, I could cry. I could get upset. I could tell you how I feel. You're not going to care. You're not going to do anything. So it's just me against the world. It's me and myself. So I'm not even going to try that much. I'm not going to connect to you that much. Why? Because I don't believe that you really care, that you're really going to show up for me. So I'm just going to be standoffish. I'm just going to dismiss all of it, because I've already learned in life that I can't really trust anybody. Nobody's going to show up for me.
Right. Yep.
And
that all checks out.
Yeah. And how quickly does PTSD develop? Is it like an instant thing? Does it develop over months or years? Can somebody be like fine for a year and then all of a sudden they're experiencing symptoms? How does that work?
Yeah. So it can, they call that delayed onset, but usually for, like, if you're going, you know, by the official diagnostic criteria, it needs to be at least a month since the particular event, because, you know, a lot of people, they can go through things that can be really challenging. But again, if you have enough support, if you have people around, and it could be family, it could be teachers, therapists, whoever it is, to help you make sense of that in an adaptive way, you won't get PTSD. You can be fine. But it's that when you don't have that, when a length of time has passed, and like I said, it has to be at least a month, and you're still having the nightmares, you still have the, you know, the startle response, you get scared really easy, you're still avoiding not going to certain places, then we're getting into PTSD territory.
Yeah. Okay. Is there, I know we talked a little bit earlier about tools that you give your clients. With EMDR, I know if somebody's just out in the world, they aren't going to have access to EMDR maybe in the moment that they're suddenly being triggered by something that they weren't expecting to be triggered by. Is there something that you recommend people do if they are out in the real world, something happens? Is there like a quick go-to that you like to tell people that can kind of help them get back in the right part of their brain rather than the flight, fight or freeze?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anytime, like when we're feeling like really scared or really startled or something, we need to be able to calm the body. My first go-to is usually going to be the breath. Let's focus on the breath, because what we want our brain to be able to do is to be able to realize, hey, false alarm, I'm actually safe. You know, I know it feels like I'm unsafe. It feels like there's something going on, but that's not the case. I'm okay. And so when our body is activated in that way, then our nervous system is going to turn up, because it's going, again, fight, flight, or freeze. It's going to go into the state that it thinks it needs to be in order to protect ourselves. And so a lot of times that's going to include, like, you know, the shallow breathing or the increased heart rate. So when we are intentional about our breathing, let me slow my breathing down, you know, the focus on, people talk about belly breathing, like, you know, not breathing in the chest, getting down in the stomach, breathing slow. Let me breathe in very slowly, slow it down, take 6 seconds. Let me breathe back out. Let me take 8 seconds, because when you breathe out, you want to take longer than you do when you're breathing in. Again, that helps to calm the nervous system, to let it know, hey, false alarm. I know it feels like it, but we're actually safe. We're okay. We're fine. So that's always going to be a go-to. I always teach my clients slow breathing. There's a video on YouTube. It's actually by that the Calm app. You guys have heard of that?
This is so funny. We just got them as a sponsor. And I was just trying out the app for the first time yesterday. And one of the things they said was breathing in to follow your breath all the way in. And then on your exhale, follow it all the way out. Like really notice with your mind that full in and out. And that did really help me. So anyway, sorry, what were you going to say about it?
But yeah, so the because there are a bunch of different videos, but I like theirs. And so that's something that I will send to clients a lot of times. And I tell them, don't wait until something happens. Like, you want to start doing this now while you're calm, while you're good. Like, let's just make it a normal part of your day. You can do it in the morning, in the evening, at lunch, or whatever. And it just has a little, it's like a blue orb, and it like expands as you're breathing in, and then it contracts as you're breathing out. So I'll send that to a lot of people. So if you get more practice doing it before you're in the moment and you need it, then it's going to be easier to do it in the moment. So that's something that I tell people to do. Something else is also like, for example, things that appeal to your senses. So things that, you know, that we can see, that we can smell, that we can taste, those can be have calming effects on our body. So for example, a lot of us have really strong sense of smell. So if there is something, if there is a scent that you really like, that is very appealing to you, that's very calming for you. So for example, for me, it's roses. I love anything rose scented. Like, it just puts me all the way in a happy place. And so if it's roses, or some people, it might be peppermint, it might be lavender, or whatever it is. But if it's a type of scent that you can actually have, like encapsulate, you can carry that with you. Little, you know, vial or a little bottle of essential oil or something like that. When you feel yourself getting activated, you can scent, you can sniff that, you know, to help calm you back down. Also with people, we do in EMDR, but also outside of it, we can do a lot of visualization. So we can come up, what is the calm place for you? So what is a place, it could be real or imagined. If it's real, a place that you've been to that felt just absolutely good and relaxing for you, you have no type of sad memory attached to it. You know, there's nothing angry or sad that could come up when you think of this particular place. So for some people, they might say, oh, my grandmother's house, but my grandmother died. Okay, then we can't use grandmother's house because now her death is attached to that. Well, it could be, oh, when I was in first grade, I had a neighbor who was so cool, and I would go over there and play with their toys. Okay, so then maybe the neighbor's house. So then I'll ask them, so when you think of your neighbor's house, what kind of imagery comes up? Oh, they had this big red slide. I used to love that slide. It was so fun. And then their room was over to the left. And then, okay, so I have them bring that up. And I say, okay, so now let's imagine that. Let's imagine you there. You were there on the, and when you feel it in your body, and then something that you can do, I talked before about the bilateral stimulation that we do at EMDR, but there are tons of ways to do bilateral stimulation, and you don't got to have a therapist there with you when you are doing resourcing. So you can pull up the imagery. Oh, okay, I see it. I see the red slide. It's there. It's fun. And then you can just tap your body. Because when you tap, it's causing that same left, right stimulation in the brain. And so we want to be able to do that. We want to keep it slow, because faster is processing. That's, you know, that's something else. But when we're calming ourselves, we want to keep it slow. You can tap like this across your arm. My hair took away, but I'm like here, or on your lap. Or you can walk. Walking is still bilateral, left, right, left, right. So now you don't want to walk while you're doing this visualization, because then you might fall or something like that. But just literally just going on, you know, lots of people instinctively, if they're upset, oh, I just got to go on a walk. You know, that calms the body. It's the bilateral part, the back and forth. But we can do that too. Bring up, let me go to my, I know I'm feeling triggered. I'm feeling activated. What is my calm place? Okay, got my calm place. When you feel it in your body, let's tap it in. You can do that. And anybody can do that.
Oh, those are such good tips. Yeah. I feel like I'm like slowly taking notes over here, because I just feel like that's, those are all just such good grounding kind of tips for anxiety. And maybe if it's not even related to PTSD, but I feel like that would help a lot of people when they feel that coming up. Can somebody have PTSD even if they were not, if their like physical
life, or if their life wasn't in danger. Like, for example, maybe they received a phone call about a loved one who was in a car accident. So they were not the one in the car accident, but now they're on edge thinking that somebody they love might be dying. Like, is that considered PTSD as well? Or is it only considered PTSD if you were physically in danger?
Yeah, it can be, you know, they have what they call like secondary trauma or vicarious trauma. So even though I wasn't immediately there and going through whatever it was, but because of my proximity to it, because I know that that this was with my mom, or even hearing about it a lot, you know. So sometimes therapists, they work with a lot of different trauma, a lot of different things. It's things that you got to do to take care of yourself, because that trauma can settle into you. So most people with PTSD are going to be people who have experienced a specific thing themselves, but you can still be affected by it when someone close to you has experienced it.
Gotcha. Yeah. Mm. I love the advice too of starting to do those exercises through the Calm app before you're actually in a situation where you can be triggered. We talk a lot on the podcast about doing things that your future self will thank you for.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get in that habit, but you're so right, because anytime I've felt triggered in that way and I can feel my heart rate going up and my breath getting more shallow, it is so much harder to come down from that in the moment than I think if I was more consistent on a day-to-day basis with like just waking up and doing something that would help if something were to trigger it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What if somebody's tuning in right now and they believe that one of their loved ones is suffering from PTSD, but they're not sure how to approach them about it? Maybe that person is not trusting of people and they don't want to seek a professional or something. Like, what is the best way to kind of get them the support that they need?
Yeah. So I think it would depend on, even if they are not trusting of other people in general, I would say to that person, are they trusting of you? You know, do you have that relationship? Because if you have that relationship with them, then you have an advantage. Like, you have a certain end that other people wouldn't have. And so in general, maybe they don't like other people, or maybe they don't like therapy, or they feel like, you know, I don't want to deal with that stuff. It's fake. It's silly for you to just be able to say, and it doesn't always have to be saying like, hey, I think you should get a therapist, but starting off and saying just like, how are you doing? Like, I'm concerned about you. Like, what is your life like right now? What are you experiencing? I'm asking because I'm noticing that you're sleeping a lot more, or that you're a lot less, or I'm noticing that you get really, really irritable and that it used to be your thing. I'm noticing that you used to always come with me to the parties and now you don't. I'm noticing a change in you and I'm concerned. And so you don't want to lead with, oh, go talk to the specialist or anything. You just really want to try to get them to open up with you about their experience. Because if they say, well, yeah, it has been rough, or now, yeah, don't go to the parties anymore because that's really scary for me, or if you can get them to do that, then they will be more likely, if you said, oh, okay, well, that sounds really tough. Well, if you need some help, I can recommend, you know, I know some people who can help with that. I know a different therapist, or even I was reading an article the other day. You want me to send that to you? That might be helpful. Like, you know, you would just want to ease it in, you know, because they may not take the bait immediately, but you want to at least be able to put it there. And so, you know, you don't want to just say like, hey, I can see you're going through this. You need to go to therapy. You're probably going to shut that down. But like, hey, how are you doing? You know, I'm noticing some differences in your behavior. I'm concerned about you. You know, what is it like? And then if you can gauge from there, are they open to any type of resource? Again, even if it's just an article, even if it's just a, hey, I got this YouTube video, you know, it helps me to calm my breathing. I can send it to you. Maybe try that. But just something small to get them to be open to it.
Is there anything that we didn't touch on that you feel is important for people to know about PTSD?
Important to know. I would just say, know that, and this is for anyone who maybe is currently dealing with it in their lives, that doesn't have to be your reality. Like, it is possible to get over it. Because I think some people just get to the point of like, this is just it. And I'm going to just have to deal with it. And I'm just going to keep having these nightmares. I'm just going to have to, you know, I'm not going to get much sleep and I'm not going to be able to go to these types of places. That doesn't have to be it. There are people and there are resources that can help you get over that so that you can get back to leading a life that feels good for you. And so that's the main thing that I want to be able to share. And just in general, like if even if it's not PTSD, if there is something that you are struggling with and that is difficult for you, lots of times I always tell this to all my clients, we go through things that are hard and traumatic. Lots of times those traumas happen in isolation. So either physical isolation, I was alone, or just emotional isolation. I feel alone. I feel unseen. And so healing happens in community. Healing happens when we are able to connect with other people and not put the expectation that I just got to get through it and I just got to pull myself by my bootstraps and it just got to be me. That no, that's more of the same. It's already just been you. You've already been sitting with it on your own. So reach out to your community, to the people that you love and that you trust, and don't allow yourself to think that you have to sit in discomfort alone. You do not.
Thank you. Those are such nice words.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Seriously. Thank you so much for giving us your time today. This was awesome.
Yeah. You're welcome.
And where can people find you and your work and all of that good stuff?
Yeah. So you guys can find me. So I am on Instagram, Healing Her Trauma, H-E-A-L-I-N-G, and then just Her and Trauma. And then my website is the same, healinghertrauma.com.
Perfect. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Have a good rest of the day.
Okay. You too.
Thanks,
Nadira.
Bye.
Wow. I feel like I learned so, so much from her, and just what a comforting way for her to end what is, you know, a heavy topic to talk about by saying this doesn't have to carry out through the rest of your life. Like you can heal from this, because I think it's easy for PTSD to become kind of part of your story or your identity, where the more you talk about it, I mean, you have to talk about it to process it, but it can be easy to then hold on to it as like, oh, but this is part of who I am. And I think it's a nice reminder to hear like you can heal from it and move on from it.
Yeah. Such a jam-packed episode. I just love the way that she explained things. Like, I feel like it sunk in a lot differently than when I've read or listened to things about PTSD in the past, of just kind of explaining like where it's hanging out in your brain and why it's really important to kind of bring it to the forefront, process it in a different way, and kind of like store it in a different area. I thought that was so good. And those practical like grounding tips, oh my God. I'm going to be using that shit just for anxiety spirals and all of that kind of stuff. So many like great practical applications in this episode, which, you know, I'm always a fan of hot tips.
It's such a dense topic, I think, from a professional's perspective, to explain it in like almost layman terms to people who are not in the field. And I really did feel like she held our hands and walked us through almost like a Blue's Clues episode. It was like a lot of like easy to visualize. This is what's happening in your mind. These are things you can do to help when you're on your own. That was explained so well.
Yeah, she really simplified it. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
And we also have an iTunes review of the episode. This is from VicBen12, and it says, "New listener, hi ladies. I just wanted to let you know that I really appreciate your take on the topics you present on your podcast. I'm a social worker and my humor can be pretty dark at times. So the array of topics you discuss, including sarcasm, is lighthearted and educational. Thanks so much for your content and continuing to do a great job."
Thank you so much. Thank you. That's so nice to hear. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't left an iTunes review yet, we would love for you to. It helps the show stay on the iTunes charts, and then you can get your review read on the podcast.
Yeah.
And Del, do you have any segments? Do you have a good shit? Is there anything crazy happening in your life?
I have a good shit. I had a family bridal shower this past weekend, and we all went to the Gentle Barn in Santa Clarita, one of my happy places. It was really nice. It was just such a relaxing day. We had a little picnic. We held and pet a bunch of animals. I just freaking love that place so much. And I know this was another segment on another episode, Kels. Yeah. Remember when I told you that one of Cam's wedding gifts to me is we sponsor a chicken at the Gentle Barn named Rebecca.
So that was like the episode that I think I announced I stopped being vegan.
Yeah, Yes. And you started eating chicken or something.
Yeah. So, it was where I started eating chicken and you adopted a chicken. Yeah.
Yes. So I was able to visit my daughter, Rebecca.
Oh my God.
Pictures with her. It was a great family outing. And then my family met her. So it's like, hey, you finally met, you know, your niece and your granddaughter and all this stuff. So that was really nice. Yeah, it was great. So that was my bridal shower. But yeah, that was it. What do you got?
Oh, I thought of you because, okay, well, first of all, my good shit. This episode is coming out a month after. It's like almost exactly a month. Right now, the day we're recording this is April 12th. So my birthday was a couple days ago. Delaney and I just had our birthday week. My birthday is 5 days after Delaney's. And I just had one of the most magical weeks of my life in Las Vegas for my birthday. I got to headline the Laugh Factory, and they just really spoil the comics that come through there to headline. And I, you know, Vegas is just such a special place anyway because of the amount of promotion that's going on there. There's so many like live shows. But I had my first billboards. I was on the top of, like, my photo was on the top of cabs, and there was like a giant truck with my face on it. There were billboards everywhere. I could not believe how many there were. My friend Chelsea picked me up from the airport, and we were driving on our way to a meal, and we thought that we had like seen all of them. And then we're just driving and talking, and all of a sudden she's like, "Ah, oh my God, oh my God." We look up and there's like this whole other giant one just like chilling above a Denny's on the Vegas Strip. We were like, this is so crazy. So that was truly magical. It was also at the same time as the big Hall of Fame foosball tournament. So I got to play foosball during the day, do my shows at night, and then my birthday was on Sunday of that weekend, and I had some friends fly out and drive out for it to be there with me. I mean, it was just, it's like, how do you even come down from a week like that? Like, nothing can
so many top highs. It. So it many highs.
So many different highs. Yeah. And we did Top Golf on my birthday. If you guys have never done Top Golf before, it's basically like a giant driving range that's almost like mixed with a little bit of like a nightclub. I don't know. Like it's like a bar vibe, but with golf. And I thought of you because my group and I ordered like the taco platter to share. And it was just this like massive taco platter of like chicken tacos and beef tacos and pork tacos. And I was like, oh, Delaney would not be happy with this. So, I'm sorry.
Guacamole and chips. I'd be fine.
That's true. They did have guacamole and chips.
Veggie tacos. They got them. Rice.
Oh, yes.
Guac, tomato, lettuce. You throw it on there. I'll eat it.
Yes. I was so hungover. I like that taco platter just fixed everything that was wrong in my body the day after a lot of tequila, but you know.
Nice. Oh, what a fucking great birthday, dude. I forgot to mention my birthday. Did I mention my birthday on last recording? I don't even remember either.
It's hard when we record so far in advance because it's like I can't keep track of what we've talked about is like a good shit or not. But
yeah,
there were some very sweet helpsters that came out to the shows in Vegas, and yeah, it was one of those weeks where I'm like, I am so lucky. What a special life to have to get to do things like this. So it was really great.
Awesome, dude. Oh, I'm so glad. What a fabulous birthday. Oh, I wanted to give a shout out. Cam took me to a great restaurant called Nick's on Beverly in LA for my birthday.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Holy shit, dude. It was so fucking good. So if I can't remember talking about my birthday, but if I didn't, shout out to that restaurant for just crushing it. It was so delicious.
Nick's on Beverly, and it's a
Nick's vegan. On Beverly vegan. We had a truffle burger. We had like avocado crispy rice. We had like pork in quotation marks, lettuce wraps. I had vegan fish and chips. So fucking good. Wow. What else? I'm missing things. There was more. Oh, we had barbecue chicken pizza. We had a banana split. We had a drink or 17. I don't remember. It was great. restaurant for my birthday. Had some beautiful flowers delivered from friends and family. It was very nice and hung out with the boys. And we had a couple of our friends, babysat Maverick and Goose so we could go out for the night. I was like, wow, we're really like, what a different vibe.
Mom and dad out on the town. look out, eating their vegan food.
We're going out for 3 hours. Oh my God. Get the sitter. Call the sitters. Make sure the fridge is stocked. Yeah, it was good. It was a good time.
Nice.
Yes.
Well, yeah, be sure to head to kelseycook.com, get those tour date tickets, come see my special. So excited. Yes.
I'm so excited. Oh, and what a great freaking area. I mean, Denver, what a great fucking city. We're just so excited to be there.
I can't believe how many messages I'm getting of people saying that they're flying out for it. Like, wow, that's so nice.
Great destination.
But it is, yeah, truly. Yeah. Like, if you are, I don't know, looking to make like a summer vacation plan and you want to see a comedy show, Denver is a really fun destination. So many great restaurants, so many fun things to do. There's the Topgolf in Denver. But yeah, so we hope that this episode was helpful. Well, can't. You know, my brain, the tequila is still in there. We hope it was helpful for you guys. And if PTSD is something that you want us to talk more about on the show, feel free to write into us, selfhelplesspodcast@gmail.com, or send us a message at selfhelplesspodcast on Instagram. If you don't follow us on Instagram, we would love that as well. We post video clips from the show every week, and it's a good time.
We should have Nadira back to talk about EMDR. We should have her talk about that specifically, because that's super fascinating, that process.
Taylor touched on it a while back, but maybe it was just a whole episode we did on therapy or types of therapy, because she was doing EMDR. But I don't think we did a specific episode on it. That would be great.
Cool. That would be really cool. And if you've been listening to Efficient of the podcast, and you're like, why am I not getting it anymore? Go to DelaneyFisher.com and sign up to receive it straight to your inbox. It's still happening. It's just not available in the same way or format anymore. So all right, everybody. Yes. We love you.
Thank you so much.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you so much for listening to the Self Helpless Podcast. You can find our Patreon community, merch, and our individual work at selfhelplesspodcast.com. We'd be thrilled if you shared this episode with a friend, or feel free to post it on Instagram and tag @selfhelplesspodcast so we can repost you and say thank you. Yeah.